Weekly Fukushima Update, 4 April 14, 2013. Radiation levels over the past week have averaged around 120 counts per minute, which is about 10 times normal background level. No alpha emissions have been detected in rain samples. Never before seen huge numbers of dead and dying sea lions are beaching along the west coast, along with a huge 35 square mile mega dolphin pod offshore, estimated at over 10,000, and whales as well. Something is happening in the Pacific. And in other news, money talks and it can shout, but it cannot silence the truth. These filthy, dirty tar sands projects are a result of easy access to capital and a combination of wishful thinking and speculative behavior. Health concerns increasing after Arkansas tar sands disaster. Students sent home after illness from fumes, and our workers cleaning up dead fish at night. And the corporate media, you know, the ones that run Exxon ads, are lying to you about how bad this disaster is. They've been claiming Exxon stopped the liquid tar from reaching Lake Conway. The lake has wetlands at its edge. I have pictures and videos showing the tar in those wetlands and covering open bodies of water at the edge of the lake. Exxon got the FAA to issue a no-fly zone until further notice. They have a public communication station set up, manned by EPA and other officials and Exxon PR specialists. And when reporters ask questions, they stonewall them. One reporter was threatened with arrest by the sheriff at Exxon's request. So, just like with BP in the Gulf, they're running the show, keeping the truth hidden, and lying to the public about how bad it really is. And the corporate media is soft peddling the story. After all, they make money running Exxon ads. Also, residents of Mayflower, Arkansas, are suing ExxonMobil for damages in a class action lawsuit that is seeking more than $5 million in compensation for property damage. This Arkansas class action lawsuit involves the worst crude oil and tar sand spill in Arkansas history, the lawsuit reads. The Shell pipeline spill is the fourth disaster this past week for tar sands promoters, as their oil floods Arkansas neighborhoods, Exxon wins National Safety Award. Isn't this the definition of irony? Around 250 pipeline-related accidents occur each year. Safe, dependable gas. This explains why there's a big disconnect between reality and the public's minds. Epistemic closure is a phenomenon best demonstrated by the right-wing media machine that failed the Republican Party during the 2012 election. This dynamic involves how conservatives and the Tea Party GOP media try to create a self-contained reality that defies empirical reality on policies ranging from taxes to evolution to climate change to war-making. Epistemic closure has made the right-wing media echo chamber a type of religion. its websites, talk radio shows, and TV programs are its sites of worship. The anti-intellectualism of contemporary conservatism finds comfort in the simplistic, binary, enclosed worldview that is legitimated and reinforced by the conservative infotainment complex. Carl Sagan, the scientist, philosopher, and author, famously suggested that extraordinary claims demand extraordinary proof. In the right-wing media machine of 2013, said rule has been modified such that paranoid delusions and fantasies are accepted as truths without proof, and what the factually grounded and mentally healthy call common sense has been rejected a priori as some type of vast worldwide machination and trickery from the left. Epistemic closure and the right-wing echo chamber reinforce and legitimate white racial resentment and hostility towards people of color. Epistemic closure also does similar work in how the right-wing media legitimates both anti-women and anti-gay attitudes. The Republican Party is spending $10 million to improve its outreach to black and brown communities. This is wasted money. The Republican Party has demonstrated repeatedly that white racial resentment and white victimology, bigotry, and xenophobia are its core values. Bigotry and racism are not gaffes for the Tea Party GOP. These values are core to the Republican Party. These repeated claimed mistakes, long recurring about the same thing, are not honest errors. They are signals about the party's core values. The Republican Party is facing obsolescence, and its retrograde racial attitudes are driving its morbidity.
This is Micropower Radio. You're listening to the Micropower Furious George Show. High powered. And potentially offensive to some of you resource extractionists out there. For everyone else who cares about the future of the planet, potentially stopping this Keystone Pipeline and other very bad ideas that will make our climate inhospitable. We will continue with that theme here. LPFM, Low Power FM Radio, which is kind of in the spirit of the old school micro-powered free radio DJs, also known as pirate DJs. So look, we're just going to kind of keep cranking it up, heating it up here in the studio. We've got like sleet coming down in the middle of spring. There's nothing wrong. Just pay no attention to the massive catastrophic apocalyptic climate shift that's happening right now outside your window. If you're not furious, you're not paying attention.
If this bill will have any impact on the president's decision over the Keystone XL pipeline, I mean, do you think this is making any of the senators who voted for it last week think twice?
Well, it should. The sort of nonchalance with which people have approached this entire issue, from the issue of spills of oil onto the land to the issue of spilling carbon into the atmosphere, is really appalling. I mean, our greatest climate scientist, Jim Hansen, who about an hour ago announced his retirement after 42 years from NASA, he said 18 months ago now, burn this stuff on top of everything else we're burning, and it's game over for the climate. You would think that might have gotten somebody's attention. Sooner or later, all these things are going to add up, and people are going to realize what unnecessary folly this is.
I couldn't agree more. And I mean, you know, Bob, we've heard the president talk about the dangers long term of the internal combustion engine, how it's 20th century technology. Do you think that he or our legislators in Congress may be swayed by disasters like we just saw in Arkansas?
You know, John, unfortunately, I just don't. We are in a cycle of find it, produce it, burn it, find it, produce it, burn it.
So what you're seeing now is that solar, this is nuts, but is actually starting to beat out gas in California on cost alone. Wind is starting to beat out coal in the Great Plains states on cost alone.
So because of large subsidies in both cases. The solar, the California
subsidies for every form of... There are subsidies for every form of energy, for coal, for gas, for solar, for wind, for nukes. What we're seeing, though, in 2012, for all of the new capacity that came online, more new capacity in solar and wind came online than coal and gas and nuclear. Had record droughts and record wildfires and record storms. Our temperature increase was a full degree Fahrenheit over the previous record. All of that was in 1 year, with barely more than a degree of warming. We're about to see almost 4 degrees of warming. We're about to see that. That's almost locked in. So we have to do something different.
Just 2 days before the big suburban spill in Arkansas, a train derailed in western Minnesota, spilling 15,000 gallons of crude into a rural Minnesota field. We don't know for sure whether that was also tar sands oil, but we do know that it came from Alberta, which at this point is probably as famous for its tar sands as for anything else. As for the pipeline that ruptured in Arkansas, that pipeline used to carry crude oil from Texas up north to Illinois. But in 2006, because there was so much heavy crude oil coming out of Canada, Exxon reversed it. So now it flows north to south, bringing dirtier, harder to clean up crude oil for the middle of the country.
Pegasus Pipeline, just like the Keystone Pipeline, was touted for having the latest and most advanced leak detection technology, and on and on and on. This is just one more sign of what a misbegotten adventure this whole tar sands thing is. There's a tremendous op-ed piece in New York Times today from the Canadian writer Thomas Homer Dixon pointing out that a plurality of Canadians oppose this pipeline and are eager to get rid of the whole tar sands business. This is a disaster not waiting to happen. It's a disaster happening in slow motion.
That trying to stop the tar sands development is hard to do. It's particularly hard to do when you have the U.S. government, the Canadian government, and the oil industry all aligned to try to expand development. But what we're saying is that we can't do it. What we're also proposing is that clean energy, which is cheaper, which will put more people to work, which won't threaten our air and water, won't destabilize our atmosphere, is ready to do the job. It's ready to take up a much larger proportion of our energy demand in the United States. We're ready for a clean energy transition, but that transition will be delayed, it'll be suppressed, the more money we sink into these new big fossil fuel projects.
Now, with big financial institutions, if they can break the law and drag in billions in profits and then turn around and settle paying out of those profits, they don't have much incentive to follow the law. It's also the case that every time there's a settlement and not a trial, it means that we didn't have those days and days and days of testimony about what those financial institutions had been up to. So the question I really want to ask is about how tough you are, about how much leverage you really have in these settlements. And what I'd like to know is, tell me a little bit about the last few times you've taken the biggest financial institutions on Wall Street all the way to a trial. Anybody? What I'm asking is, when did you last take a large financial institution, a Wall Street bank, to trial? My question is, when did you bring them to trial? Ms. Walter? Question I'm really asking is, can you identify when you last took the Wall Street banks to trial?
I will have to get back to you with the specific information.
Okay, we've got multiple people here. Anyone else want to tell me about the last time you took a Wall Street bank to trial? You know, I just want to note on this. There are district attorneys and U.S. attorneys who are out there every day squeezing ordinary citizens on sometimes very thin grounds and taking them to trial in order to make an example, as they put it. I'm really concerned that too big to fail has become too big for trial. That just seems wrong to me. If I can, I'll go quickly, Mr. Chairman Johnson. I have one more question I'd like to ask, and that's a question about why the large banks are trading at below book value. The question I have is, what reassurance can you give that these large Wall Street banks that are trading for below book value, in fact, are adequately transparent and adequately managed? Governor Tarullo or Ms. Miller? In December, HSBC admitted to money laundering, to laundering $881 million that we know of for Mexican and Colombian drug cartels, and also admitted to violating our sanctions for Iran, Libya, Cuba, Burma, the Sudan. And they didn't do it just one time. It wasn't like a mistake. They did it over and over and over again across a period of years. And they were caught doing it, warned not to do it, and kept right on doing it, and evidently making profits doing it. Now, HSBC paid a fine, but no one individual went to trial, no individual was banned from banking, and there was no hearing to consider shutting down HSBC's activities here in the United States. So what I'd like is, you're the experts on money laundering. I'd like your opinion. What does it take? How many billions of dollars do you have to launder for drug lords, and how many economic sanctions do you have to violate before someone will consider shutting down a financial institution like this? Mr. Cohen, can we start with you?
Certainly, Senator.
Let me just move you along here, though, on the point, Mr. Cohen. My question is, given that this is what you did, what does it take to get you to move toward even a hearing, even considering shutting down banking operations for money laundering?
So, Senator,
I understand that. I'm asking, in your opinion, you are the ones who are supposed to be the experts on money laundering. You work with everyone else, including the Department of Justice. In your opinion, how many billions of dollars do you have to launder for drug lords before somebody says, we're shutting you down?
Well, one of the issues that we're
I'm not hearing your... I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, and I just need to move this along, but I'm not hearing your opinion on this. You are supposed to be, Treasury is supposed to be one of, you are the leaders in how we understand and work together to stop money laundering. And I'm asking, what does it take even to say, here's where the line is. We're going to draw a line here, and if you cross that line, you're at risk for having your bank closed.
So, Senator...
So you have no opinion on that. You sit in Treasury and you try to enforce these laws, and I've read all of your testimony. You tell me how vigorously you want to enforce these laws, but you have no opinion on when it is that a bank should be shut down for money laundering? Not even an opinion?
Of course, we have views on...
That's what I asked you for, your views.
But I'm not going to get into some hypothetical line-drawing exercise.
Well, it's somewhere beyond $881 million of drug money.
Well, Senator, the candidate.
Governor Powell, perhaps you can help me out here. I appreciate that, Mr. Powell. So you're saying you had no advice to the Justice Department on whether or not this was an appropriate case for a criminal action?
So it's not our jurisdiction.
So what you're saying to me is you are responsible for these banks. And again, I read your testimony, and you talk about the importance of vigorous enforcement here. But you're telling me you have no view when it's appropriate to consider even a hearing to raise the question of whether or not these banks should have to close their operations when they engage in money laundering for drug cartels?
But when they make these decisions, they make them themselves.
So I understand that I'm over my time, and I'll just say here, you know, if you're caught with an ounce of cocaine, the chances are good you're going to go to jail. If it happens repeatedly, you may go to jail for the rest of your life. But evidently, if you launder nearly $1 billion for drug cartels and violate our international sanctions, your company pays a fine and you go home and sleep in your own bed at night, every single individual associated with this. And I think that's fundamentally wrong. I want to know on a bank-by-bank basis the number of families that were illegally foreclosed on. Will you give me that information? What I'm asking for is a bank-by-bank analysis of how many families they illegally foreclosed on. Will you give us that information? And why are you not making that public? I just want to make sure I understand. So if someone believes that they have been illegally foreclosed against, will they still have a right under this settlement to bring a lawsuit against the bank?
Yes.
All right. Now, if a family wants to bring the lawsuit, you're both lawyers, would it be helpful, if you're going against one of these big banks, would it be helpful for these families to have the information about their case that's in your files? Mr. Yes. Ashton?
It would be helpful, obviously, to have information related to the injury. Yes, it would.
Okay. So do you plan to give the families this information? That is, those families that have been victims of illegal foreclosures, will you be giving them the information that's in your possession about how the banks illegally foreclosed against them? Mr. Ashton?
I think that's a decision that we're still considering. We haven't made a final decision yet.
So you have made a decision to protect the banks, but not a decision to tell the families who were illegally foreclosed against?
We haven't made a decision about what information we would provide to individuals. That's true, yes.
Mr. Stepana?
We're in the same position.
So I just want to make sure I get this straight. Families get pennies on the dollar in this settlement for having been the victims of illegal activities or mistakes in the bank's activities. You let the banks, and you now know individual cases where the banks violated the law, and you're not going to tell the homeowners, or at least it's not clear yet whether or not you're going to do that?
We haven't made a decision on what we're going to tell the homeowners.
You know, I just have to say, I thought this was about transparency. That's what this is all about. People want to know that their regulators are watching out for the American public, not for the banks. And the only way that we can evaluate whether or not you're doing your job is if you make some of this information publicly available. And so far, you're not doing that. And without transparency, we can't have any confidence either in your oversight or that the markets are functioning properly at all. So, and that people are going to receive proper compensation for what went wrong.
How the corruption process works is this. Take all the people they know they can't buy off or corrupt, and zoom in on their private and personal affairs. Identify any weaknesses or skeletons in closets, anything that can ruin a career, major embarrassments, anything that could use up years of life in court cases, waste a person's life savings, whatever. Anything that removes their ability to be an effective opponent. If nothing seems available, then they have a car crash or a skiing accident or a heart attack in their bath. and then they get replaced by pedophiles who are permitted to indulge their preferences just so long as they do what their handlers tell them. This is very, very close to describing the control that Baxter crooks have over our political puppets.
More and more and more and more and more and more. Say rich. America's built on corporate greed. It's not Wall Street's fault if you can't get what you need. Save the rich. Don't go crying to mommy, because if you don't agree, then you're a socialist commie. Save the rich. Blame yourself for your problems, not the bad economy. So what if those who have the most are the ones who put it in jeopardy? Fuck your student loans. Fuck your kids and their health care. It'll only take 10,000 of your jobs to put another private jet in the air. Save the rich. It's so easy to do. Just let yourself be ignorant to what's been done to you. Save the rich by doing nothing at all. Deny all sense and logic and just think really small. You should think really small or just don't think at all. And save the rich.